Hello and welcome to At Home This Morning, our magazine programme for older listeners, which we hope will also be of interest to the not-so-old. I'm Richard Davis, and I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Coming up in that time, we'll be hearing about a local charity that aims to relieve loneliness that's just received a sizeable grant from the National Lottery Community Fund. Then we'll find out about how the current pandemic is affecting those people who suffer from Alzheimer's disease, and what can be done to alleviate it. On a more cheerful note, we'll be hearing about a local cafe and social facility dealing with the over-50s, which, despite the fact that it hasn't been able to welcome people within its doors during the past few weeks, has been producing all sorts of online activities for its patrons. And finally, we'll be hearing from a psychiatrist about how the fears that some of us older people have about starting to go out and participate in outside activities again may well be exaggerated, and what we should do about it. As usual, we'll be giving out various telephone numbers, email addresses and website addresses during the course of the programme, so you may like to have a pencil and paper handy so that you can write them down. Incidentally, if you're at all worried that I've been putting my health at risk by going out and doing all these interviews, I can reassure you that they were all done from the comfort of my own home using Zoom, which accounts for the fact that the sound quality of some of the interviews isn't quite up to our usual standard, something for which I must apologise. And indeed, my wife and I are still in very good health, as is our cat. OK, let's get started by finding out about the local charity that's recently been awarded a sizeable grant from the National Lottery Community Fund. The charity concerned is Time to Talk Befriending, and they've just been given £22,000. To find out the details, I started by speaking with John Eastwood, who's the Deputy Director of the Fund for London and the South East. I started by saying to him that I hadn't ever heard of the National Lottery Community Fund and asking him if it was something new.
We used to be the big lottery fund beforehand. Our purpose, though, hasn't changed at all. So we continue to support communities across England and the UK.
And it was last year that the name change happened, I gather.
Yes, we spent a lot of time consulting with our customers and speaking to them, and really it was about they believe we support communities. We knew we supported communities, and it was felt that our Big Lottery Fund brand name wasn't helpful to that. Rather, the National Lottery Community Fund was very clear, linked what we did, which is support communities, and also the National Lottery, which is where we get our income from.
So are there other funds in the National Lottery then?
Yes, they are. There are ones that support arts, sports. There's quite a few other ones. One support British Film Council. But all of us distribute the National Lottery Good Cause money and make sure that it supports the communities that most need it.
What sort of projects do you support?
We support an amazing array here at the National Lottery Community Fund. We basically support community projects from, say, £1,000, which can be just helping a local group buy a piece of equipment to do up their allotments, all the way up to larger scale projects where we're funding charities to support people and befriend people, for instance. Older people charities to support older people coming through social isolation and loneliness. Or it might be we're providing £10,000 to support a community group to help design and develop a range of creative project kits to support children and young people during lockdown.
I presume people have to apply for these. You don't go out and look for good causes to support.
Well, we do a bit of both, actually, Richard. So, yes, I lead all of our regional teams across England. In every patch in England, every location, we have people working or connected to organisations working locally. So we can make sure that the money we distribute from the National Lottery Community Fund gets out to the people who most need it.
But I presume that people who get the money do actually know it's coming. It doesn't come out of the blue as a pleasant surprise.
It doesn't. We will have talked and spoken to them, or they will have directly applied to us.
Now, you've recently given out a new tranche of money. Was this a special for the COVID situation?
Yes, that's right. We're running what we call a COVID-19 emergency response funding right now. And in the southeast of England, we've just awarded just over £2.2 million to 160 community projects. And that's part of a much larger amount of awards that we've made from England, which is totaling just under £30 million this month. So as you can see, we're really trying to get our money out quickly to support communities now.
And I gather that in the latest funding, you've actually given some money to a local charity of ours here in Brighton.
That's right. We've actually given it to a number of charities in Brighton, but Time to Talk Befriending received emergency funding of just under £22,000 from us to expand their intergenerational befriending service for older people at risk of loneliness in Worthing and Adur. And we really hope that's going to help support them to address the increase in demand that they've experienced due to lockdown. And this is on top of a £90,000 National Lottery grant that they received last year from us to help expand their reach in the local area, ensure more older people are not lonely.
And that's very good. I must thank you on behalf of the older people in Brighton for being so generous.
Please don't thank me. It's really the National Lottery funding and the players. They should be really proud that their money they've raised is making a real difference at a time when it's most needed. And we're lucky enough to support some incredible groups who are a real powerful force for good, supporting people to connect, reducing feelings of isolation, and helping communities come together in new and inspiring ways.
Well, John, thanks very much.
Well, thank you, Richard.
Well, after talking to John Eastwood of the National Lottery Community Fund, I went to meet Emily Kenwood, who's the founder and CEO of Time to Talk Befriending. And I began by asking her if she could tell me a bit about the charity.
Absolutely. It's a charity that originated from a social action research project in East Brighton and Kemp Town. Very long story short, I started to go to a church back in 2011 in the area, and every time I walked there, I noticed all the high-rise blocks and the sheltered housing schemes. And I knew from training as a social worker that there were hundreds of older people living in those properties, but we never saw anyone who was over the age of 50 in the community. So I felt a real need to try and connect with those people to ask them what is it that they felt they might be missing from the community. So with the help of local charities and individuals and volunteers, we brought people together and we asked 94 residents, what do they think is missing? You know, are they happy with what's happening in their community, or do they feel like they need something? And everyone we spoke to said, actually, I feel invisible. Until you'd contacted me, I hadn't actually spoken to anyone for weeks or months. And actually, I would love to have a friendly face visit me at home. So that really is the foundation of the charity, the voice of the people that we spoke to at that time. And that formed the foundation of Time to Talk Befriending as it is today. 7.5 years later, it's grown quite a lot.
So what do you actually do?
We offer a range of different services, and everything that we offer has been based on what older people tell us they would like. So the core platform of the charity is one-to-one relationships between older people who are experiencing loneliness, who don't have very many social networks. And we connect them with a volunteer who's got similar interests and hobbies, and we match them together for friendship and company. Sometimes there's like 50, 60 years difference between them, but these relationships are amazing and they end up being quite long lasting as well. We still have matches from 7.5 years ago that are still going strong, which is great. We also specialise in intergenerational projects, so bringing together different age groups in group befriending type offers, either in a church hall on a weekly or monthly basis, and we help people to get out of the four walls of their homes by providing transport and support to get to those venues. We do that in partnership with local colleges as well. For example, Brighton College, every year we train their sixth formers, and this year there are 160 pairs of young people that go out every Wednesday afternoon to befriend or help us at those group befriending events. We're also really proud to have started a concept called Great Oaks and Little Acorns, which brings little preschoolers together with our Great Oaks, older people in nature across Brighton and Hove, and actually getting people outside and seeing how those connections are made have been really life-giving for those involved.
Yes, often the very young and the very old get on very well, don't they?
Definitely. Well, one lady, Rabina, she her family don't live locally, so she hardly ever sees her great-grandchildren, but she absolutely loves the company of younger people and little ones, and so she's got heavily involved, and she knits them things, and it's a really special little project and great to kind of observe and be part of.
So what would you say is the value of befriending?
it's about the quality of the relationships. And I would say that, well, for example, one person, when we undertook a review with him, we asked him, you know, what is it that you appreciate from your relationship? And his volunteer visits for 45 minutes once a fortnight, which you might not think is very long, but he placed more value on that time with his volunteer than the need for food. He said he'd rather go without food than that quality time, which I think speaks volumes about the importance, you know, of relationship. And we're meant to be connected to other people, but for many, they are hidden and feeling very alone.
How has the COVID-19 pandemic affected your work?
We've been really privileged to have adapted our service very, very quickly. We called all of our members in mid-March to ask them what they think they might need, because we ceased our service quite early so that we stopped the face-to-face contact. So the 357 people we spoke to said they were really keen to have telephone contact with their volunteers, because for many, they are their only social visitor, or were their only social visitor. And there was a huge need for food provision. People weren't able to get out anymore. So we transitioned to telephone befriending, and that's been absolutely amazing. It's quite alien matching two complete strangers that we haven't even met. But we've seen the results are just life-changing for both, actually, the volunteer and the older person, which is great. So we're going to continue that beyond the crisis. But our food has been massively needed as well. We have years of experience of doing community outreach projects, so we were able to mobilise action really quickly. We've got some really great partnerships with City Coast Church and the local Brighton and Hove Food Partnership and many other organisations and churches. And so every week we deliver 75 emergency food packages and fresh home cooked meals, thanks to a brilliant chef called Wendy from Nourish Catering and Events. And they go out to people who are mostly living in food poverty across the city.
And where does the food come from?
It comes from donations, lots and lots of donations. We had financial donations in the beginning, local churches, mutual aid groups. The Brighton and Hove Food Partnership are incredible. They are not only supporting our work, but all the other food hubs across the city. They've been amazing. And it's an expensive and costly task, but it's so, so needed. And the results, you know, for the people that are receiving them, they are so, so grateful.
I gather that just recently you've had quite a significant grant from the National Lottery Community Fund. Was this a surprise when it came in?
It was, and it was a very welcome surprise, thank you. Yeah, we extended our service into Worthing last year, but it was a kind of slow starter. But actually, when the crisis hit, we were suddenly very well needed in the area. But we've also had our sights on Ada, as we know that is also an area of need where there's no long-term befriending support available for our people. So this National Lottery grant enabled us to open our doors to Ada. And we were also working with the council in Brighton Worthing to take on a large number of referrals. And so we're now four times more than our normal average in terms of the people that we're helping in that area, which feels like a privilege.
So it's going to enable you to expand your work quite a bit.
Definitely, yeah. The team have been amazing. And in 8 weeks of lockdown, they successfully made 115 additional matches between older people and volunteers, which is quite significant.
Now, if people would like to make use of your services, or indeed if they would like to become volunteers themselves, how should they get in touch with you?
We would love to hear from anyone who would like to benefit from befriending. You can pick up the phone, which is 01273 737 710, or the same for volunteers, or you can visit our website, which is tttb.org.uk.
You're obviously doing a very good job there, Emily, you and your team of volunteers. Thanks very much for talking to me. Carry on with the good work. I was talking to Emily Kenwood, the founder and CEO of Time to Talk Befriending. If you'd like to find out more about Time to Talk Befriending, you can contact them by ringing Brighton 737 710. That's 01273 737 710. Or you can visit their website, which is at www.tttb.org.uk. That's www.tttb.org.uk. Well, as you know, we've all been suffering rather from the lockdown that we've been under for the last few weeks, and that's especially true of older people who are not able to get out and so depend on people coming round to see them in order to get any human contact. Things are especially bad for those suffering from dementia. Well, one bank has decided to do something about it. UK employees of the Santander Bank are signing up as volunteers to make social phone calls to the lonely and vulnerable people in the community through Age UK and the Alzheimer's Society. And in turn, the Santander Foundation is donating £1,000 to each of those charities for every employee who takes up the challenge. To find out more, I spoke over Zoom to Sue Willis of Santander UK, and I began by asking her how many of the bank's employees were taking part.
Well, Richard, so far over 1,000 Santander employees have signed up to do one of the voluntary activities with Age UK and Alzheimer's, which we're really pleased about. And every single time an employee signs up, we're donating £1,000 to the two charities split between them.
Gosh, that's very good in two respects, isn't it?
It's absolutely fantastic. And I'm really privileged to speak to some of the volunteers and to hear some of the stories. And they really are heartwarming around the calls they're making or some of the impact they're having on the older generation particularly. It's just fantastic to hear.
Do they do this in their own time or do they do it during working hours or both possibly?
It's a real mix. It's both. And on top of this, we've got other activities that the colleagues can share with us and encourage them to do. So it's been really great. I'm hoping the number continues to grow as well, Richard. So it's growing day by day. And I think there's more we can do.
Do you give them any special training for this?
Well, as part of our partnership with Santander and the Alzheimer's Society, we're really trying to be the number one dementia-friendly bank. So we do the dementia-friendly training with all our colleagues, which is going absolutely brilliant. And for the volunteering activities, they're helped by either Age UK or Alzheimer's, or some of our own training where we really do want to care for customers really comes into play. There was a story last week, Richard, that really warmed my heart, where a member of the branch staff had just reached out to one of the companion calls, and an elderly gentleman was living with dementia, and he was talking about his days as a rally driver. And it just so happened that our branch member of staff was big into motorsport. And I think they've made a friendship for life, which is just fantastic.
That's wonderful the way that happens, isn't it?
It's really good.
Presumably the people that your staff phone up have actually asked to be phoned up. So it's not an unexpected call out of the blue. But even so, how do they ensure when they answer the phone that it is somebody from Santander and not a phishing scam?
At Santander, the partnerships we're doing with Age UK and Alzheimer's, they're all members of Age UK and Alzheimer's, and we're connecting through their programmes. The other programme that we're running is the outreach, where we are ringing our own customers who are over 65. And of course, we make sure we speak to the right person. And as you're talking about scams and fraudsters, we both know that, unfortunately, the fraudsters have seized on the pandemic. And one of the things I'm delighted to say is we're also running free virtual scam awareness sessions, 30-minute Zoom sessions for anyone, customer or non-customer of Santander, over the week and over the weekend, where you can be educated on what to look out for and help to avoid being a victim of fraud. So really delighted with that as well. We wouldn't want to make a call that wasn't welcomed at the other end. Our research does show, though, that there is a lot of people, particularly in the older generation, who are missing family and friends. And, you know, that's really what this initiative's about, is connecting people and trying to play our part, you know, to help people, particularly the older generation, who are suffering more in this pandemic than maybe other age groups.
Yes, and the older people are more likely to be confined to the house, aren't they? And so if somebody doesn't come around to visit them or get in touch, they might not see anybody.
Absolutely. And the Santander research said, this really hit home to me, that Some of the older generation can go over 30 days without speaking to somebody, which must be really isolating and sense of loneliness. So anything we can do, all of us, to pick up the phone or to visit or pop in within the guidance, obviously, social distancing is, I'd really encourage as many people as possible to do that.
I then went on to speak to Helen Foster of the Alzheimer's Society, and I began by asking her whether people with Alzheimer's were able to understand what was going on in the present lockdown.
They can't very well. And in fact, people with dementia are the absolutely worst affected group in society by the virus. It's the most common pre-existing condition to people catching the virus. And regrettably, of all the people that have died through the virus, a quarter of those are people who have had dementia. And then on top of that, we've had a massive spike in dementia deaths that are not related to the virus. And we think that really partly due to isolation, loneliness, the condition advancing because of that isolation. And people have just given up in some cases, you know, not being able to see their loved ones for a very long time. People have literally given up and we're seeing that in the death rate.
I suppose they can't remember, even if you explain it to them, why it's happening.
No, that's absolutely true. And we've had some heartbreaking stories from carers where their loved ones just don't understand the concept of lockdown and not being able to go outside. We've heard some stories where people have gone out, you know, against advice, if I'm truthful. And when they're out, they don't understand the concept of social distancing. So then people have been angry with them, you know, members of the public who haven't understood that they've got dementia. And more recently, we're hearing that people are very, very fearful of seeing people out and about in masks. They can't understand that, and that's very hard to explain to them. So all in all, lots of factors that make it a very, very difficult situation for people with dementia.
What sort of things can be done to help them?
Lots of things. We ask people if they need help to reach out to us, Alzheimer's Society. And we have a 7 day a week support line. Our Dementia Connect support line can be telephoned on 0333 150 3456. We have expert advisors that can give advice and support and just listen if someone wants to have a conversation. We ask people to look at our website, which is simply alzheimers.org.uk. And that has pages and pages of really good advice about how to cope with the virus itself, but also how to cope with lockdown and how to cope with isolation. And then our expert workers are doing welfare calls to people. We've done almost 100,000 calls to families who are isolated and lonely. And obviously our amazing colleagues in Santander are doing companion calls for us. We have about 1,000 of their employees who are volunteering for us and just ringing up and having a chat with people, because that human contact is irreplaceable, really, and can make someone's week, let alone make their day.
I gather that Santander are not only providing volunteers to help out with these telephone calls, but they're donating money to you as well.
They are. We are so, so grateful to them for their financial support, because like all of the charities, we are being badly hit by the financial situation. So the financial support from Santander has enabled us to continue our welfare calls to people, our online forum Talking Point, which many, many carers in particular get benefit from, but also by turning a lot of our existing services into virtual services. So things like Sing for the Brain that we're doing through Zoom and through other teleconference media, and our advice and information really on our website. So their financial support is absolutely crucial. And we do ask people if they can support us financially to do so through our emergency appeal on our website.
I was talking to Helen Foster of the Alzheimer's Society and Sue Willis of Santander UK, who are providing both financial and volunteer support for the Society during the period of the coronavirus crisis. If you'd like to find out more about the Alzheimer's Society, you can go to their website, which is www.alzheimers.org.uk. And I'll just spell Alzheimer's for you. It's Alzheimers. That's Alzheimers. And the complete website address is www.alzheimers.org.uk. The support line for people who are caring for Alzheimer's sufferers is 0333 150 3456. That's 0333 150 3456. And they also have an emergency line for short-term advice during the crisis, which is 0330 333 0804. That's 0330 333 0804. Now, during the time that I've been presenting at home this morning, I've often heard people talk about an establishment called the Hop 50 Plus, but I've never actually found out much about it. I gather it's some sort of a social venue for people over 50, and it's in Hove. Anyway, I thought it was about time that I found out a bit more about it, so I spoke, once again via Zoom, to Lynn Hastings, who runs the Hop 50 Plus, and I asked her to tell me what it is.
The Hop 50 Plus sits within the St John's the Baptist Church on Palmyra Square by Cornerstone Community Centre, and we run a community cafe aimed at people aged over 50 who are feeling vulnerable or lonely or isolated for whatever reason. And they can come along and come and have some home-cooked food at our cafe. And we also have a programme of activities that we run 7 days a week. The activities will be something physical activity, strength and balance, dance, that kind of thing. Might be something creative, like art, poetry, book club. Might be complementary therapies. It might be a trip out on the minibus. There's a whole range of things that we run usually, as we would normally be open. So people can just turn up. And ultimately, it's somewhere where people can come and socialise and meet other people. That's a key part of our role, I would say.
How long has it been running for?
It was opened, I understand, as a maybe a more traditional day centre lunch club in the early 80s, I understand. It's been running in its current format as the Hop for about the past 5 years or so. As I say, 7 day a week community cafe.
Looking on your website, I've seen pictures of people doing all sorts of things, like dressing up as Sherlock Holmes. And
yeah, that's our drama group, yeah.
As you say, somebody can just drop in. They don't need to contact you in advance.
I mean, they can. If you've been feeling a bit isolated, if you are feeling a little bit vulnerable, it can be tricky just to turn up somewhere. So we're always really happy if somebody wants to give us a call ahead of time. We can make sure that some member staff is available to have a coffee and to go through the programme with them to see what we can offer them. So we're always really happy to do that. We're always really mindful of people coming in and keeping an eye on them if they're new and just having a chat and seeing if they know what the Hop's about and what they might like to get involved in. But it is very, very relaxed and people are really welcome just to wander in when we're open and find out a bit about what we do.
Well, you keep saying when we're open. I assume the current coronavirus crisis has made rather a dent in your activities.
Indeed it has, yes. We have adapted, and we adapted quite quickly. Certainly the first couple of weeks after we closed, we were spending a lot of time talking to our customers by phone and just finding out what their needs were, what support they were looking for. These are kind of, I think, probably about 150 people that we stayed in touch with by telephone. And also, the Friday was a dedicated day to people living with the early stages of dementia. And we have continued to support people, as we have a wider Hop population, by telephone calls. We have been running Zoom sessions, very successfully, actually. And my colleagues have been producing a weekly schedule of Zoom sessions that people can join. And that's strength and balance, strength and flexibility sessions, live music, singing, quizzes, coffee and conversation. We have a tech buddy who's available if people want some support with digital IT matters. So that's been a very useful resource. So we've kind of been able to continue to run the activities or some of the activities that we would offer normally to people. We have been running as a food hub, working closely with the Brighton Hove Food Partnership and also with Time to Talk Befriending. And we've been delivering emergency food parcels from the Hop across Central Hove. I think it was about 80 at one stage we were delivering a week. We've been working with volunteers and staff to pack and deliver the emergency food parcels. And we've had staff back in the Hop to cook. And we've also been delivering cooked food to people across the city, working with Time to Talk and Befriending. So yeah, we've been using the Hop 3 days a week as a food hub. So there have been staff in there working, although we're not open to customers at the moment. Staff running Zoom sessions so people can join in with the activities and people having a chat on the telephone once a fortnight, once a week. So we've definitely stayed in touch with our customers. We are providing a service and I think it's been well received and is valued. And people are very keen to get back to the Hop, obviously, but also realistic about public transport and coming back into the building. The other thing that we were aware of was that not everybody had access to the internet. Not everybody was online. And so working with Ageing Well, we've created some activity packs that go out every week to people, either by post or online if they have that. And so people can get these packs every week, and that's quizzes and art themed tasks, word games, that kind of thing. So the idea is that there's an activity every day for 7 days, and we send those out every week to people. And again, they've been very well received. And that's been something, as I say, that we've done working in partnership with Ageing Well, or as part of Ageing Well.
Yes, I've got in front of me a printout from your website of 2 weeks' worth of online activities, and there's certainly an awful lot going on. One of the things that interests me is Desert Island Discs. So who do you get in to talk about their favourite music on that?
Well, that was one of the sessions we used to run at the Hop, and it was very popular. And how we run it is a member of staff invites a group of people to join her, and then the people within the group will just identify a song that they would like to have played, and then they just talk about why it means something to them. So it's a group Desert Island Disc.
Well, it's one way of getting to know your fellow members at something like that.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that people have said about the Zoom sessions, and I know the quizzes and the strength and balance classes we run, we've had anywhere up to 25, 26 people joining the sessions. People have really valued the opportunity to have a chat with their Hop peers and to see each other and just catch up. That's been a really important element of the Zoom sessions we've been running, certainly.
Did you say earlier on you'd been working with Time to Talk Befriending?
Yes, indeed. The Hop 50 Plus is part of the Ageing Well partnership of local organisations and charities. It's those services across the city that have really adapted what they've been doing in response to the lockdown. And there's been some really, really good partnership working certainly happening.
As I was talking to Emily from Time to Talk Befriending this morning, actually, I did an interview with her. Now, in the days when you are open to visitors, and hopefully will be again, people can just turn up at the Hop and take part in what's going on. But how do people take part in the online activities if they haven't done so before?
They can email my colleague Paula Carter. I can give her email address if that would be helpful. paula.carter@impact-initiatives.org.uk. I do have a mobile that people can call if they would like some further detail or some confirmation of that address. So my work mobile is 07595 931 322. And I'd be really happy to have a chat with people about what's available at the moment.
That's great. And all this information is on your website?
Yes, it is available on the website. As I say, as part of the Ageing Well partnership, we also have a phone number, which is a single point of contact for the Ageing Well service. And that number is available Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. And people can call that number if they want to find out about the Ageing Well activities, opportunities across the city. So that's 0770-061072. There's also an Ageing Well directory that we've been producing, and that comes out 3 times a week. And it's just an up-to-date list of useful information that people might need, both locally and nationally. People can get information about that on that phone number, or via our Impact Initiatives website or the Ageing Well website.
Okay, well, there's plenty of ways that people can get in touch, and there seems to be plenty going on. Thanks very much for talking to me about that.
Thank you very much for inviting me to come along and talk about the HOP.
I was talking to Lynn Hastings about the HOP 50 Plus in Palmyra Square in Hove, which she manages. If you'd like to take part in any of the online activities that they're running, you should email Paula Carter. Her email address is paula.carter@impact-initiatives.org.uk. That's Paula, spelt P-A-U-L-A, dot Carter, at impact-initiatives.org.uk. Or you can phone Lynn on 07515 931 322. That's 07515 931 322. Well, fortunately, things are getting better in terms of the lockdown. We're now able to go into pubs and restaurants under certain conditions, and to go out and meet more people than we used to. And it looks as if things are getting better week by week. But certainly, people with long-term health conditions and older people are still feeling a bit anxious about going out again. Speaking personally, I know that I'm not intending to go out any more than is necessary while the virus is still around and before there's a vaccine available. Of course, these fears may well be rather exaggerated, and to find out more about them, I spoke to the psychologist, Dr. Hermira Riaz. I began by asking her why it is that some people are still so reluctant to go out.
Well, understandably, people with existing health conditions and those, described as vulnerable have been super sensitive to health-related information. So with all that COVID-19 messaging that we've been having for the past few months, they've been in a persistent high-threat, low-safety state. And we know that when the human brain faces complex threat situations for prolonged periods, it's wired to look for shortcuts, simple solutions. And what that means is that for many people, lockdown has become synonymous with safety, and lockdown easing equals danger. And the latest research suggests that over 50% of those living with long-term health conditions, they're anxious about the lifting of lockdown. And so we've got a lot of people in vulnerable groups who've become especially risk averse during the pandemic. One in four with underlying health conditions are afraid to leave the house. One in five haven't left their homes since March, except for emergencies. But as we know, Richard, staying safe by shielding is a double-edged sword. Being too risk averse comes at the cost of many of the things that make life worth living. And missing out on those things can negatively impact our psychological and physical well-being.
What can be done about this situation?
The initiatives by We Are Undefeatable are to support the 43% of people in England living with at least one long-term health condition. And the idea is to encourage them to do a little bit more physical activity in a way that feels safe for them and works with their condition.
Can you just explain what We Are Undefeatable is?
Yes, of course. It's a campaign which launched last year, and it supports and inspires, as I say, people living with at least one long-term health condition, such as diabetes, cancer, arthritis and Parkinson's. The aim is to get people active in a way that's safe for them. It works with their condition, not against it. It's not prescriptive. It doesn't push you. It doesn't make you feel bad if you don't do things. It really asks you to work in a little bit more physical activity so that it sits comfortably within your life. We've got a number of new initiatives launched in relation to COVID-19. There's Team Undefeatable. It consists of two virtual teams, depending on what you like to do, walking, football and dance. And it brings people with health conditions together to get active and form a community. You've also got 5 in 5. It's a customizable mini workout. It lets you choose 5 fun, gentle exercises that you can do in just 1 minute each. And then there's My Daily Undefeatable. It's a new virtual assistant tool hosted on Facebook Messenger. And it reminds people to do regular check-ins about how they're keeping active, but also how they're feeling physically and emotionally. And so all of those things can help you to just do a little bit more and move towards that sort of new normal that everybody keeps talking about.
So you say it encourages people to do regular check-ins. Does that mean checking in online with the group to tell them of your progress?
Well, checking in with the group, there is a community that you can join, but also making sure that you're keeping an eye on how you're doing during the day. It's easy to get busy and distracted with so many things and to get worried about what you're hearing. And what this does is it just sends you notifications at regular intervals, just to remind you to think about the physical activity that you could add into your routine. And also, you know, whether by doing physical activity, it's helping you emotionally and with your sense of well-being.
So it's an automated system that sends you a reminder every now and then.
Exactly.
Who's involved in the We Are Undefeatable campaign?
Well, you know, charities that you will recognise, experts from those charities. So Macmillan Cancer Support, Mind, Alzheimer's Society, Age UK, British Red Cross, the National Lottery, all of the main charities involved in both mental and physical health.
Apart from participating in this campaign, which is obviously a good thing, are there other steps that people can take in order to improve their mental health and make them less reluctant to go out?
Absolutely, Richard. There's probably two lessons from behavioural science that I'd like to share. One is watching out for the monkey mind. The monkey mind is a Buddhist term for a restless, worrying mind. It's in a constant state of restlessness. It's a primitive part of our brain system, and it takes over when we're in chronic stress situations. It gets us stuck in fear-driven thought patterns. And so just as we can spook our body and our brain into a threat response when we're overwhelmed by data, we can also calm our monkey mind down intentionally and mindfully. For example, by switching off notifications, being careful about our news sources, making sure that they're trusted news sources, limiting our social media use, and also by deactivating habits, meditation, breathing, yoga, gentle exercise. So that's one thing, watching out for the monkey mind. And then the second thing is the psychology of habit change. This changing things in your life is about incremental gain. It's not a linear process. It has ups and downs. It's all about making micro changes. There's a lot of trial and error. And I always advise people when they're thinking about any kind of change to try it for 3 weeks without judgment. Don't judge whether it's working or not, but also don't judge yourself if you're not doing it in the way that you think you ought to. Don't let the inner critic take over. Focus on your reasons for change, build your motivation, and balance risk aversion with risk friendliness. Make your decisions on the basis of reality, not driven by fear. The aim here is to make calculated changes based on a personal audit of your condition and your circumstances, because there's really only one expert on you, and that's you.
Yes, and in the case of whether one should go out and resume activities that you used to enjoy, I suppose it's a case of balancing the positive effects of going out and picking up your old activities against the possible risk, which is decreasing all the time, and deciding what the correct balance should be.
That's exactly right. It's about doing your interior work, not getting too swayed by what other people are doing, not getting frustrated with yourself if you feel like you ought to be doing more, but not getting so fearful that you end up doing too little. It's a balancing act. And, you know, it's all about taking personal responsibility, making your own choices.
So how can people find out more about the We Are Undefeatable campaign?
Well, there's the website, of course, www.weareundefeatable.co.uk. You can just Google We Are Undefeatable. And there's also these gentle activity playlists on the YouTube channel We Are Undefeatable.
Dr. Hermira Rias, thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Richard.
I was talking to the psychiatrist, Dr. Hermira Rias, about the states of mind that may deter us from going out and taking full advantage of life as the lockdown eases. She's involved in a project called We Are Undefeatable. And if you'd like more information about that, you can go to their website, which is www.weareundefeatable.co.uk. That's www.weareundefeatable.co.uk. They also have a Facebook page, which is www.facebook.com/We Are Undefeatable. And again, We Are Undefeatable is typed all as one word. That's www.facebook.com/We Are Undefeatable. And that brings us to the end of our programme for this time. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed everything that you've heard in this edition of At Home This Morning. There'll be another edition in a fortnight's time, and that'll be presented by Chris English. And I'll be back with you in 4 weeks. So until then, it only remains for me, Richard Davis, on behalf of Grey Matters Productions, who make this programme for Radio Reverb, to wish you all the very best, and to hope that you keep well and happy and are able to enjoy the summer weather. Take care of yourselves. Goodbye.
At Home This Morning is a Grey Matters production.